From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of April, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. I'll tell you about the weather forecast. We'll take a look at the agricultural news, and we'll get an update of the cash grain situation. That with Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, corn futures finished the day higher. The nearby May contract up 19 and a quarter at $5.79 and three quarters. July $5.62 a bushel, up 16 cents. And December corn, a settlement price at $4.94 and three quarters, up 9 1/4 cents for the day. That was up on its high, or nearly its high for the day. The beans finished at $14.15 and a quarter, up 6 1/2 cents. And the lead May, July at $14.09 and three quarters, 6 3/4 higher. And November at $12.73 and a quarter, up 2 1/2 cents. Bean meal, $2.30 lower. Bean oil up 53 cents. And July wheat up 12 1/2 at $6.28 and three quarters for the soft red. Live cattle futures in Chicago were a dollar higher for the lead option. Feeders were down 50 cents on the day, and lean hogs finished 97 1/2 cents higher. Matt Bennett now joins us from AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, yep. Thanks for having me.
Is the weather keeping you out of the field, or have you not made a decision just yet to venture in?
Yeah, we've actually planted quite a few beans so far. I'm close to half, actually. So the weather has cooperated with us. We only had 2 tenths overnight. Probably going to plant a few beans yet today. Kind of holding off on corn a little bit, but we were thinking about planting some corn. We just want to kind of see what this weekend weather does.
And speaking of corn, it jumped pretty sharply today in Chicago. You've been watching that closely. Why did it happen?
You know, the interesting thing, they talk, about how dry it's getting in the plains and how it's affecting spring wheat. You see the wheat market jump today. And I think that it kind of unleashed a little bit of enthusiasm, especially for those folks that were expecting maybe a little bit of a friendly report here on the April S&D. And so I think that it just kind of snowballed, and maybe some of the folks that were planning on, foreseeing a big jump due to maybe a lower carryout, bigger exports. I think that we foreshadowed that report just a little bit. That's not saying that we can't go on up tomorrow, because I do think there's a lot of good things going on for this corn market. But bottom line is, this was a heck of a good day for a non-report day.
Yeah, it is a pretty good jump, and you're saying it has to do with the dry weather out to the west. What happened in the wheat market, and then, of course, tomorrow, USDA will update the monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates, and they'll have to think about the grain stocks numbers that really didn't change very much, I suppose. Although the trade is hoping, and has been for some time, that the export figures for corn will increase. Do you suppose that will happen?
Well, you know, the exports, for instance, the exports this morning weren't anything to get too excited about. But you know what? We've sold all the corn that USDA is currently forecasting that we were going to sell for this whole year. And so, whenever we stop and think about this, the USDA, based on export inspections, which is actual shipments, you could make the case that the USDA could move up 150, 200 million bushels on exports and have the ammunition to do so. We're actually running ahead of pace on inspections, whereas earlier in the marketing year, we were not. So my personal opinion is that they will increase inspections or increase export sales. Oh, I'm going to say a good 150. So I expect that carryout number, the average trade guess was a little shy of 1.4. I'm going to think it's going to be closer to 1.3 than 1.4.
Now, farmers watching today probably called the elevators and wanted to know exactly why this market jumped. However, especially in the old crop, unlikely, I think, to have made a sale, because that would involve potentially moving something off of the farm. And I'm wondering what you think about looking forward over the next month as they get busier in the field, and really they're not going to be able to move anything that's in on-farm storage, or not very willing anyway, over that time frame. Do they need to take advantage of some of these upward movements?
You know, my personal opinion is, you know, you're looking at prices well over $2 above what we saw last fall. We know we're wildly profitable at this level, so you cannot make a mistake selling corn here. Okay, I want to start there. But can we go on higher? Yeah, absolutely we can go higher. I think the interesting thing for this market is that the April S&D is certainly, it has the ability to keep us well supported. Maybe we're not going to see a big jump after going up 18, 19 cents today, but we'll keep us well supported. And what the trade is going to immediately understand if we do take carryout down tomorrow is that that carryout is going to be what you're going to be looking at in the month of May as your carry in for your new crop, and you have to use 91.1 for planted acreage here in 2021. And with that being the case, you're looking at your carryout situation being rather snug. I mean, you would have to throw one heck of a large yield at this situation to be able to even get to 1.5. And so at this stage of the game, I think a lot of the trade is going to be heavily focused on not only what we see tomorrow, but what we can plan on seeing there on the May S&D.
If tomorrow comes out as you expect, you think that we will see $5 December futures in the near future?
You know, you'll probably see it tomorrow if it's a friendly report. We closed the day, you know, within earshot of 495. We're just a shade under it. Definitely right there. I think there's going to be a lot of selling as we get close to $5. And so if a producer's been sitting around waiting on a $5 level, don't be afraid to sell some 496 and 497 and 498, because that extra couple pennies can cost you a heck of a lot of money.
Okay, a couple of other things. The CONAB numbers were released. Looks like they have a good crop because of acreage, and mostly for soybeans. And that's going to, in turn, while they did lower, I believe, total corn production, make corn production pretty large as well down there. And then you have continuing whispers, and maybe a bit more than that, about ASF in the northern growing regions of China, which is actually their corn growing region. So what are the expectations between all of those as it relates to the export markets for both corn and beans?
Well, you know, first of all, this Brazilian crop, I mean, the safrinha crop, there's still a lot to be determined there. I mean, that's one thing I didn't mention, is that some traders are getting a little nervous about it, especially the southern growing region for Brazil having some issues with dryness. And so, you know, that's an area that's heavy on the safrinha crop. And no question that, you know, if you end up with this dry season starting as scheduled, maybe a little ahead of time, it could be devastating on the safrinha crop, which at this stage of the game, I think that they could be overestimated just a little bit. Now, as far as China's concerned, no doubt ASF, nobody can get a handle on it, because getting good information out of China is not always the easiest thing to do. But bottom line for me is that China's interior prices this last year suggested to me they were certainly running short on good corn. I think they're still going to want to take ownership of most, if not all, of the corn they purchase. Now, are they going to do it all in this marketing year? I mean, that remains to be seen, but I do think they need the corn. They've been running a big corn deficit for several years in a row, so this is nothing new. It's just a matter of it got to the point where they were going to have to do something to control corn prices. And so I guess as far as the export market's concerned, I do think we're going to stay fairly healthy. I don't know that we're going to see another huge round of buying out of China, but at the same time, we really don't need to at this stage of the game.
Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with infrastructure. Senate Republicans are pressing for an infrastructure-only bill in a bid to downsize President Biden's more than $2 trillion package. Republicans say President Joe Biden could score a win if his infrastructure plan included just roads, bridges, waterways, ports, and broadband funded with user fees.
We're going to have to convince the Democrats that they've got to work in a bipartisan way. and to get all the non-infrastructure stuff out of this bill.
That's the chairman of the Ag and Finance Committee, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. He says Democrats may be forced to go bipartisan. He points to bill opposition by West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin and others that would deprive the party of 51 votes to pass the bill.
I heard Manchin say, I read it in the press here just this last couple weeks, that he says there's five or six other Democrats don't like the tax proposals of the president. And if we can get this back to an infrastructure-only package, which is about $500 billion of the $2.25 trillion, I think we've got a good chance of getting something done.
Senator Grassley has also criticized the Biden plan for providing subsidies to what he calls the wealthy to buy electric vehicles instead of providing help for biofuels and ethanol-fueled vehicles. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., and with agricultural policy actually a bit broader than that, as it relates to stepped-up basis and has consequences across the taxing structure. Any change in the capital gains tax policy that eliminates or scales back a stepped-up basis could result in a massive tax burden on the agricultural sector. That, according to AFBF and ASA, the American Farm Bureau Federation, and the American Soybean Association, to minimize the impact of burdensome capital gains taxes, farmers and ranchers used a stepped-up basis, which provides a reset for the asset value basis during intergenerational transfers. The magnitude of the tax burden that would be felt if basis is taken away or reduced would likely significantly exceed the annual income generated by the assets, something that has American farmers worried. ASA President Kevin Scott says what people may not realize is that it could take years of returns to equal the amount of tax if stepped-up basis is reduced or worse, eliminated. AFBF President Zippy Duvall adds, eliminating stepped-up basis would make passing the family farm to the next generation much more difficult. And one more piece of domestic agricultural legislation out of Washington, D.C. House lawmakers recently introduced the Preserving Family Farms Act of 2021, a priority for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. NCBA has long supported efforts to reduce tax burdens on farmers and ranchers. The bipartisan legislation to expand IRS Code Section 2032A would allow cattle producers to take advantage of special use valuation and protect family-owned businesses from the impact of the federal estate tax, commonly referred to as the death tax. The Preserving Family Farms Act increases the maximum amount allowed under the exemption from $750,000 to $11 million, indexed for inflation, thus reviving an important tool in the toolbox for farm and ranch families across the United States, says NCBA. If enacted, the legislation will provide a permanent solution to an issue that has long plagued cattle producers. While the current 2032A reduction is 55% higher than the value established two decades ago, USDA estimates that cropland values have increased by 223%. And finally today, this week, 13 animal welfare and environmental groups urged federal agencies to maintain regulatory authority over genetically engineered food animals within the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. The request is in response to the Trump-era proposal to move the regulatory authority to the Department of Agriculture. Specifically, USDA's Animal Plant and Health Inspection Service would oversee regulatory authority over genetically engineered animals. In letters to the FDA and USDA, the groups claim FDA possesses the scientific and administrative capacities to regulate these animals better than USDA, unquote. The groups contend genetically engineered animals are a significant new threat to the food system. Dana Pearls of Friends of the Earth says handing authority over to the USDA would dilute the already weak GMO animal regulations. The 13 groups signing the letters to the Biden administration include the Center for Food Safety, the Animal Legal Defense Fund, Friends of the Earth, and the National Family Farm Coalition, among others. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Because the WASD, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report, is due out at 11 o'clock tomorrow from the United States Department of Agriculture, we'll hold off on recording our Commodity Week program until tomorrow during the day, and you'll be able to hear a portion of it during this hour tomorrow on our home station and many of these radio stations over the weekend, too, and up on the website after that time. But Commodity Week will not be posted this evening. Again, tomorrow, USDA releases the April WASD. That's at 11 o'clock. You can find those numbers on our website at willag.org at that time, and then watch there for Commodity Week later in the day. Mike Tenure from T-Storm Weather in Chicago is out of the office today. I'll travel with you across the Corn Belt. We'll start in Kansas, where today it's 64 degrees with a little rainfall, sunshine tomorrow and 71. Saturday, 64 and rain, and Sunday, 72 and sunshine. That'll stay with the folks out in Kansas for the rest of the week, but it'll cool off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday with highs in the low 60s to upper 50s. The lows in that period around the mid-40s, there are a couple 35 degrees there, too. In Fargo, North Dakota, in the far northwestern part of the Corn Belt, rain today and tomorrow, a high in the upper 40s to low 50s. Saturday, sunshine. Sunday as well. However, their temperatures will remain pretty cool, and then they drop off by the time they get to Tuesday of next week. 33 degrees, a little snowfall in Fargo on that day. Their lows drop down to 27 on Tuesday evening, 28 on Wednesday night, and Thursday they come back up to 32 with a 45 degree high under cloudy skies in Fargo, North Dakota. Making our way eastward, Minneapolis, Minnesota, today 63, tomorrow 58, rainfall on both days, sunshine then through Monday with the mid-50s for the high, a little rainfall possible on Tuesday, 41 for the high, 42 and 53 respectively, the high under sunny skies on Wednesday and Thursday in Minneapolis. To the south of there in Des Moines, Iowa, 58, 61, and 58 for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Rain potential on each of those 3 days. And then sunshine with a high of 68 on Sunday, dropping back on Monday like the rest of the Midwest to a temperature high that's a little lower, 59 degrees for the high on Monday, Tuesday 52, and then back up into the upper 50s for Wednesday and Thursday. Again, sunny skies there in Springfield, Illinois. It looks like they'll have rainfall today, 63 degrees. Friday, 73 degrees and sunshine under partly sunny skies. Saturday, 60, Sunday 65, Monday 66, some rainfall possible on each of those 3 days. 60 degrees under sunny skies on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, partly sunny and again in that 60 degree range for the high. 67 is the high today right now in Indianapolis, and they'll stay rainy all the way through Sunday. And then turn into sunshine with a 72-degree high on Monday. A little warmer for that day for them. And then drop back to 60 under sunny skies on Tuesday. And in Columbus, Ohio, rainfall from now all the way through Tuesday. And they'll be in the mid-70s to upper 60s through that time frame Wednesday and Thursday of next week. High about 60 degrees under partly sunny skies. Let's turn our attention now to what's been happening in the cash grain market. However, I think we'll start with the futures and get a reaction to today's trade in Chicago from Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons. Normally, we talk with you on Mondays, but I thought today might be a good day to catch up with you because the price of corn jumped so sharply. Can you give me your assessment of what took place?
Well, the rumor is that China may be in to buy more corn. And so if that's the case, they want the corn nearby. So the May corn contract is continuing to invert. chart over the July. It had been trading 13, 14 cents more than the July. Today, it's out to 17, 18 cents more. So the market is trying to incent farmers and elevators to move corn sooner rather than later. And I'm just not sure how much more old crop corn is left out there, 10, 15% maybe. And the farmers, until they get it planted and see what kind of start the new crop corn gets off to, they're probably going to be a little hesitant to sell old crop corn, it feels like.
So I take it they were not successful in making that incent today.
No, we have not bought a lot of corn. We've had answered a lot of phone calls about why corn's up 15, 20 cents, but that hasn't converted into actual farmer selling today.
Did they make any new crop sales?
No, they sold too much too soon in their minds last year, and they're not going to make that mistake again this year is what they say. So, and again, with the crop not even planted, with the subsoil moisture and topsoil moisture on the dry side, and you know, there's just a lot of uncertainty about the weather this summer. So I think they're going to be a little cautious and until we get further on down the line and see what kind of how the crop develops.
My impression as I made a trip northward yesterday for just a bit was that there aren't many farmers moving, at least yet, and they were staying patient, I suppose, waiting for the rainfall that we've gotten in the last 24 hours. Is that what you're seeing across the whole of your draw area?
Yeah, we saw some people planting corn as early as Saturday of last week, and then a few more on Monday and Tuesday of this week. But like you say, that it's still plenty early with the rain in the forecast today and then Saturday, and then some cooler temperatures next week. I think a lot of the majority of people, the vast majority of people, did field work and prep work. But as far as actual planting, you know, it probably in the single digits, you know, less than 10% in our area got planted, and it was an equal mix. I mean, there were some beans going in the ground, and then there was some corn going in the ground as well. So maybe 5% of the corn and 5% of the beans are planted, but that's probably about it around here.
You know, over the years, I have asked you often about the trains going to the southeast, and we usually talk about that being filled with corn. Do you do much rail to the southeast for soybeans?
Very little. The processors, either here or on the CN, which goes straight south, that's probably the better bean market right now. And this year, corn is not, you know, the bids, there's plenty of corn, it seems like, domestically. So those NS bids to the southeast have not been near as attractive as the export market bids. So a lot more corn going down to the Gulf this year. And so those export bids are probably a little bit better than the processor bids, which is kind of unusual. We haven't seen that in the past for very often, but this year we're certainly seeing that.
And I have a follow-up question in kind of that same thing. As the Southeast has begun to raise more soybeans, it appears they're also raising more corn. Is that cutting into that marketplace? It sounds like maybe not, but this year it's a different function.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think over time we will probably see a little bit more of that Southeast try to grow their, you know, try to originate their own corn so they don't have to rail it so far and cut down on transportation costs. But this year, I think we're coming off of a, I don't know, it wasn't a short crop, but I guess the way the market's acting, it wasn't big enough to cover the demand. You know, basis levels are 20 to 25 over, and normally we're 5 or 10 over at the processing level. So the market is certainly telling us that we don't have enough corn to meet the demand yet. Now, is it all front-end loaded, or is it going to stay that way all spring and all summer? I guess we'll find out. But right now, the market is certainly trying to incentivize farmers and elevators to move as much corn quickly as they can.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it, Greg.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. No Commodity Week this evening, just as a reminder, because the WASDE report is due out tomorrow. We'll have Commodity Week tomorrow up on our website at willag.org.